Jaya Radhakrishnam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navajit Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Ganga Maya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paskachade Shatarane Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha Panchakalpa Chubhishtha Kipasavya Vachapati Chanam Pavanevya Vaishnavya Namon Maha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 September 4th, 2017. A Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-35. This is also the disappearance day of Haridas Thakur. Pasyanti te me ruchira namba santa. Pasyanti.
See.
Te.
Te.
They.
They.
Me.
May.
May. Sorry. May.
May.
My.
My.
Ruchirani.
Ruchirani.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Actually, if we look at the word Ruchirani, Rani means queen, and Ruchi means very tasteful. It's an interesting word. Amba.
Amba. Amba.
Oh, mother.
Oh, mother.
Santa.
Santa.
Devotees.
Devotees.
Prasanna.
Prasanna.
Smiling.
Smiling.
Vaktra.
Vaktra.
Face.
Face.
Aruna.
Aruna.
Like the morning sun.
Like the morning sun.
Rochanani.
Lochanani.
Eyes.
Eyes.
Rupani.
Rupani.
Forms.
Forms.
Divyani.
Divyani.
Transcendental.
Transcendental.
Varapradhani.
Varapradhani.
Benevolent.
Benevolent.
Sakam.
Sakam.
With me.
With me.
Vacham.
Vacham.
Words.
Words.
Sprihaniyam.
Sprihaniyam.
Favorable.
Favorable.
Vedanti.
Vedanti.
They speak.
They speak.
Mother Urmila.
Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Oh, my mother, my devotees always see the smiling face of my form with eyes like the rising morning sun. They like to see my various transcendental forms, which are all benevolent, and they also talk favorably with me. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Mayavadis and atheists accept the forms of the deities in the temple of the Lord as idols, but devotees do not worship idols. They directly worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his Archa incarnation. Archa refers to the form which we can worship in our present condition. Actually, in our present state, it is not possible to see God in his spiritual form because our material eyes and senses cannot conceive of a spiritual form. We cannot even see the spiritual form of the individual soul. When a man dies, we cannot see how the spiritual form leaves the body. That is the defect of our material senses. In order to be seen by our material senses, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the favorable form, which is called Archa-Vigraha. This Archa-Vigraha, sometimes called the Archa-Incarnation, is not different from Him. Just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts various incarnations, He takes on forms made out of matter, clay, wood, metal, and jewels. There are many Shastra conjunctions which give instructions for carving forms of the Lord. These forms are not material. If God is all-pervading, then He is also in the material elements. There's no doubt about it. But the atheists think otherwise, although they preach that everything is God. When they go to the temple and see the form of the Lord, they deny that He is God. According to their own theory, everything is God. Then why is the deity not God? Actually, they have no conception of God. The devotee's vision, however, is different. Their vision is smeared with love of God. As soon as they see the Lord in His different forms, the devotees become saturated with love, for they do not find any difference between the Lord and His form in the temple as do the atheists. The smiling face of the deity in the temple is beheld by the devotees as transcendental and spiritual, and the decoration of the body of the Lord is very much appreciated by the devotees. It is the duty of the spiritual master to teach how to decorate the deity in the temple, how to cleanse the temple, and how to worship the deity. There are different procedures and rules and regulations which are followed in temples of Vishnu, and devotees go there and see the deity, the Vigraha, and spiritually enjoy the form, because all the deities are benevolent. The devotees express their minds before the deity, and in many instances the deity also gives answers. But one must be a very elevated devotee in order to be able to speak with the Supreme Lord. Sometimes the Lord informs a devotee through dreams. These exchanges of feelings between the deity and the devotee are not understandable by atheists, but actually the devotee enjoys them. Kapila Muni is explaining how the devotees see the decorated body and face of the deity and how they speak with Him in devotional service. Pasyanti te me ruchiran yam basanta prasanna vaktra anruna lochanani rupani divyani vara pradani sakam bacham sprihani yam vedanti. O my mother, my devotees always see the smiling face of my form with eyes like the rising morning sun. They like to see my various transcendental forms, which are all benevolent, and they also talk favorably with me. The Sanskrit is so beautiful. Pasyanti, they see Ruchi Rani, as we mentioned. Ruchi is some taste. Uttanapad had two queens, right? Suniti and Suruchi. Su means very or wonderful. No, Niti is rules and Ruchi is taste. So he preferred the Suruchi to the Suniti. And then Rani is the queen. And the devotees here are called Santa. Santa means very peaceful, very truthful. And prasanna is smiling, but also to be very pleased. Prasanna vaktram, a very pleased face. And aruna lochana, the eyes like the morning sun. So here in Hawaii, the sun has just risen, and the sky is very beautiful. So the sun is often compared to the eyes of the Lord. So to see the Lord's eyes are just like the beauty of the sun rising. And Rupani Divyani, transcendental forms, which Prabhupada talks a lot about in the purport. Then Vara Pradani. Vara means benediction. So Prabhupada's translating that they are benevolent, and he mentions that in the last paragraph of the purport, that God's all good. He's kind. He gives benedictions. He's giving. And then Vacha, words, and the Spraniyam, favorable words, Vedanti, they speak. So they talk to the Lord. They see Him. And they talk to Him. They don't just see Him, but they have conversations with Him. So this is what we want. We want to see God, and we want to speak to Him. Even the atheists, they are always asking to see God, right? Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad, "Where is this God? Can you show me this God? I want to see God in order to believe that He exists." What are the main arguments of the atheists? One is that I can't see Him or hear Him. I can't perceive Him with my senses. Here Kapila Dev is talking about two senses, the senses of sound and the senses of sight. And the atheists are saying we can't perceive God with our senses. And their other argument is about the fact that there's evil in the world, there's suffering in the world, and a lot of the suffering appears to come to innocent people, and a lot of the happiness tends to come to evil people. So they say, how is God benevolent? How is God Vada Pradhani? How is he someone who's giving Vada, who's giving benedictions? And therefore, there must not be a God. And the atheists, therefore, when they see people who claim to see God and who claim to talk to God, they dismiss this as some kind of fantasy. They dismiss deity worship as idol worship. I was thinking the other day about atheism and agnosticism. If someone says, well, you know, I don't think there's a God, or I don't know, how can we know? The agnostics feel that they're much more honest than the atheists, because they just say, well, I don't know if there's a God or not. And I was thinking, well, all right, if you don't know, what are the options? The options are that everything comes from matter, that there's no meaning, there's the origin is material, or the origin is nothingness, or that the origin is a benevolent person. And I thought of these two options. Does anyone even claim to have direct sensory perception of an origin of nothingness or an origin of matter? Can anyone make such a claim that by my senses I have seen, I have heard, I have touched, I have smelled the origin which is matter? I have gone to the origin of the universe and experienced it with my senses. No one has made such a claim. We used to have a video in the Gurukul called The Origin of the Universe. One devotee gave it to us. And my first thought was, well, who took a video at the beginning of the universe that they're saying, here's what it looks like or smells like or sounds like? But many people, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, claim that they have seen God and spoken to him. Millions, perhaps, over the course of human history. So unless we're going to take all human testimony as bogus, unless we're going to dismiss every single bit of human testimony, which throws out all of our court system, it throws out most of our education system. I mean, I've never been to Japan. I've been to China, but I haven't been to Japan. Is there really a Japan? How do I know? I'm going by human testimony. So unless we're going to throw out all human testimony, there is evidence that people do perceive God with their senses. They do see God. They do speak to God. They do hear God. They do smell God. They do touch God. They do taste God. And this is ultimately what we want. This is ultimately what we want. We want direct sensory perception of God. I mean, frankly, until and unless we get direct sensory perception of God, how do we know? In one sense, until we personally have direct sensory perception of God, all of us remain in our emotional level and agnostic. How can we know? Therefore, Krishna says, pratyaksha avagamam dharmam. It's directly perceived. It's directly perceived. Until and unless it's directly perceived, our faith is primarily intellectual. Now, there are far more intellectual arguments for the existence of a personal, beautiful God than there are arguments against it. The other possibilities are, of course, that God is impersonal, or that he's evil, or that he's impotent, or simply that there isn't any God. And if we were to line up all these possibilities, or there's an infinite variety of gods with no chief, that could be another one. So if we were to line up all possible scenarios for the ultimate reality, we would find far more intellectual arguments in favor of a personal, a beautiful, benevolent God. But after all, those are all intellectual arguments. I mean, even if they're arguments based on the Shastra, well, there's still a question of faith in Shastra. If they're arguments based on the perception of others, I believe that there's a Japan because I have friends who've gone to Japan. I have friends who claim that they're currently living in Japan. There are satellite photographs of Japan and so forth and so on. So then I'm believing in the testimony of others. So all of that is dependent on my faith in others, on my faith in logic, on my faith in scriptures. But ultimately, the only time we say, I know without doubt, asamsayam, Krishna says, to know me in full without doubting, that has to come from our own direct perception. There's just no way around it. There really isn't. That is our only ultimate proof. And of course, that ultimate proof is a proof which, ultimately, is personal. So if I were to say to all of you, I've seen God, I've spoken with God, I've touched God, your conviction of that, again, is on faith in me. That's a proof for me. It's not ultimately a proof for you. I mean, this is true even with ordinary things in this world. You know, I taste something and I say, oh, this is delicious. Well, you have faith that I think it's delicious. You have faith that I believe it exists. You know, this is true even on the level of consciousness. I know that I exist. I know that I'm a conscious being. Do I really know that all of you exist? And Prabhupada brings this up in the purport. You know, I can't even see the soul. The first time that I heard Srila Prabhupada speak in person, he was making this point. He says, how can you ask to see God when you can't even see the soul? I was there when my mother died, and you know, I didn't see her. I saw the body. I never saw her. I could intuit that there was a her beyond the body, because one minute she was responding, and the next minute she was incapable of responding, and the body was incapable of working. So I could have some intuition that there was some soul beyond the body, but I mean, and that she was a conscious being, but I don't know. Maybe all of the rest of you are just very sophisticated artificial intelligence and I'm the only living being. My point is that ultimately it's our own experience. So the question is, how do we get our own experience? How do we get our own direct experience? If there are hundreds or thousands or millions or billions of people throughout history who claim to have a direct personal experience of God, and Prabhupada claimed that. I was there when Prabhupada was talking to reporters, and he said, I am seeing Krishna at every moment. I am seeing God at every moment. Which Prabhupada also mentions in this purport, referring to the Brahma Samhita verse, Premandana Chalirja Bhakti Vilochane. Or maybe he does that in the teachings of Lord Kapila. Anyway, so this is the claim. Srila Prabhupada makes this claim. I'm seeing Krishna always. There was once, I wasn't there for this one, but a reporter asked Prabhupada, you know, so you're getting direction from God, which also is spoken about here, that not only does a devotee speak to God, which is what Lord Kapila is saying, Prabhupada says God's replies. And so this reporter was asking Prabhupada, so you get direction from God? And Rameshwar was saying, well, yes, you know, super souls in everyone's heart, he gives direction. And Prabhupada said, no, I am seeing God face to face. You know, so how do we do that? How do we get sensory perception of God? I mean, there's a lot of indirect, right? There's extensive direction from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita about how to see God in his energy. You see God as the sun. Here his eyes are compared to the rising sun. We see God as the sun and the wind and the heat and fire and our very breath, our process of digestion, the life of all that lives, our intelligence, our memory, so many things. We can see God that way. And how do we hear the voice of God? We hear the voice of God again. Through the scriptures, through the words of the devotees, through the omens. One of the Pandavas, I think it was Nakula, was expert at reading the omens. You know, you see someone going out with a full bucket, that's a good omen. Empty bucket, it's a bad omen. You know, or through the stars, through astrology, through the lines in your palms, and how is God speaking to me? You know, so all indirectly, through the little coincidences and things that happen in life. And we try to understand how God is speaking to me in that way. Oh, okay. Well, that's something, and that's a good start, and that's given in the scriptures as ways to see God and to hear God and to feel God. But what about God directly? What about God, not through his energies, which in one sense are the same as him, of course, but what about God directly? How do we do that? So the one way that Prabhupada's focusing on here is the deity, that we can see and hear and speak to and touch and smell, taste the Lord through the deity. And this way we can get a personal experience that we're not able with our, you know, our eyes made of, or the eyes are made out of muscles and skin and fluid and electricity. And, you know, we're not able with that gross sense and with our gross ears to hear the spiritual. We're just not able to do it. So we therefore, the Lord comes in a form that's visible to our eyes. He comes in a form that's audible to our ears. He comes in a way that we can access. Haha. Well, you can say, oh, well, you know, I go to see the deity and it looks to me like a carving made out of marble or brass, and the deity doesn't talk to me. And, you know, I don't have this experience. All right, but there's a little bit of a caveat here. And you can say, well, that's not fair, that's a caveat. But the whole principle is that God is a person. That's we're trying to interact with the person. That was the whole point from the get-go. You know, we have the logical, the scriptural, the acharya's statements all weigh in on the side that God is a benevolent person. Okay, if God is a person, not only a person, but a benevolent person, again, we have in this Sanskrit vada, Vara Pradhani, I like to give you benedictions. I'm benevolent, the Lord is saying. And we have, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Suridam. He's the deepest friend. So if he's a person who's benevolent, then he wants us to deal with him as a person. I mean, that's just kind of logical. I mean, we're like that, right? Hey, we're all like that. We're persons. And we reveal ourselves according to the extent to which people deal with us favorably. We have that here in today's verse. Sprihaniyam, favorable. And of course, this is Anukulenya in the key verse of Rupa Goswami. This is also the point that one has to deal with the Lord favorably. We're all like that. We're all like that. I mean, we have superficial dealings with many, many, many people who, in one sense, see us and hear us and maybe even touch us and smell us. But do they really see us? I mean, there's many, many people who see me, but do they really see me? Do they really know anything about me? I mean, and there's people, I'm sure we all have this experience, there are many people who see me and hear me, and they make up their own stories about me, what kind of person that I am, what I like, what my motives are, and it's like, you know, you don't really know me at all. So for me to be open, for me to reveal myself to someone, then I have to trust that they're benevolent towards me. Sachinanda Maharaj likes to say, you know, we're so worried about whether or not we can trust God, but the real question is whether or not God can trust us. You know, he's going to reveal himself to us, and especially we're dealing with Krishna. We're dealing with Krishna. So Krishna's very soft. He's very soft and delicate. He's very young at Krishna and Vrindavan. He doesn't grow up between like past like 15, 16 years old. He's very young. He's not like, I mean, he kills demons, but he's not tough at all. And he's protected by Lord Shiva as the guarder of the Dham. He's protected by Yogamaya, by Purnamasi, by his parents, by Nanda and Yasoda. He's protected. And in so many ways, it's one of, I think it's the Garuda Purana, explains that Lord Shiva and one sage wanted to see the Rasalila, and when they approached the Rasalila, it's guarded by all these strong women with weapons. Had to be women because it's a Rasalila, the men. And they said, you know, you can't come in. So Krishna's very soft, and he's very delicate and he's very giving. I mean, he says, Abhijet Sucharacharo. He says, even if my devotees do something abominable, they're still saintly. I mean, he's this very, very soft-hearted person. I mean, he can be harsh, but it's Prabhupada explains, I think it's in the first canto of the purport, that that's regretful. He doesn't like to be harsh. He doesn't like to punish the demons in the sense he doesn't want to give pain to anyone. I mean, he enjoys a good fight, but he doesn't like anyone to suffer. So, therefore, one can only get to see him and hear him and touch him and taste him and smell him if one is also similarly soft-hearted. You know, as a teacher, when kids would come and ask me a question, if it was a very challenging, arrogant question, then my canned response is, do you want to know or do you want to argue? If you just want to argue, forget it. If you want to know, we can have a discussion. So it's like that. You know, some people want to get to know about us just simply so they can criticize us. Famous people have this problem all the time. You know, people want to just, they want to talk to them and interview them so they can find some fault with them, so they can criticize them. Right? So we're not going to open ourselves up to such people. We're going to open ourselves up to people who want to know us so they can love us, who are going to see even our faults as beautiful things. So really, and God is a supreme independent. He's going to reveal himself whenever he wants to. You know, I mean, Prabhupada says in the teachings of Lord Kapila that you can't even force your way in to see like a senator or a mayor or a president. You know, you can't force it. You can't say, well, I'm a citizen of the country, therefore I have the right to. No. That person has to take the initiative. And they're going to take the initiative when they feel that they can trust us. So how do we do this? How do we show the Lord that we can be trusted? Well, first of all, we follow the rules. It says here there are many Shastric injunctions, give instructions for carving the Lord, right? And then Prabhupada also says that the spiritual master gives many instructions. So we should follow the instructions for worshiping the deity. And I can't count how many times I visit people's homes where their deity worship is very whimsical. You know, they do whatever they want to do, however, whenever they want to do it. They don't follow any process for worshiping the deity. So that doesn't show a favorable mood. I mean, if somebody wants to relate to us, they need to relate to us the way we want to relate to us. You know, if you say to somebody, don't call me on the phone, and they call you on the phone, you might not talk to them. You might say, well, I'm not going to deal with you. You're not respecting how I want to be dealt with. You know, or whatever. You know, we might say to somebody, contact me through WhatsApp and not through Messenger, or only contact me between these hours, or, you know, we may have some principle as to how and when we want to be contacted. And if somebody doesn't respect that, especially if they repeatedly don't respect that, then we may say, well, okay, you know, I'm not going to deal with you. And it's the same with God. He has certain ways he wants to be dealt with. He has certain things he wants to eat. Right? Patram pushpam palam tvayam yome bhakta prayachati tadaham bhakti paritam ashnami paritatvanam. He has certain things he wants to eat, certain things he doesn't want to eat. Certain things he likes to be offered. He likes to be offered them in a certain way. Of course, that doesn't mean that it's ritualistic in a mechanical way. I had an interesting experience a few years ago when I got my Sudarshan Shaligram Shila, and I was working with my godbrother Gorkeshwara Prabhu, who's the one who gave me the Shila, on systems of worship. I'd already been worshipping Shaligram, Kurma Shaligram, for many years, and Govardhan Shila for many, many years before that. But Gorkeshwara Prabhu felt that before he gave me Sudarshan, that he wanted me to follow certain regulations and procedures. So first he gives me a set of procedures. And I said to him, look, I could lie to you and say I'm going to do this, but this isn't, it's just not something that I'm going to be willing to do. It doesn't resonate with me. I don't know what I should say. And he said, oh, there's another system I could give you. I'm like, oh, really? There's a second system? And he's like, yeah. So he gives me another system. And I said, oh, well, this is much more compatible with me, but still, it's not quite what I want. And he said, oh, there's a third system. It's given by Bhaktivinod, whose appearance day was yesterday, in Bhajana Rahasya. So I read that, and I said, wow, this is almost perfect. And then Gaurakesha Prabhu said, well, we'll customize this for you, for your particular deities that you're worshipping, your particular mood. And I said, wow, I didn't know you could do that. He says, yes, it's an art. And that makes so much sense, right? That if you're going to be worshipping the deity, you're following the rules. At the same time, you're dealing with a person. And Prabhupada's making the point here that, you know, these are given by the guru. One second, somebody's just messaging me. These are given by the guru. And then that means that they're personalized. One second. You know, and Prabhupada writes about this also in the Bhagavatam, how that what's done in one part of the world may not be done in another part of the world. You know, and that deity worship is supposed to be done also according to, like, local paraphernalia. You're supposed to offer things that are locally grown and in season, and things can be adjusted. You know, if you're living all the way up beyond the Arctic Circle, I don't think you're going to wake up the deity during, you know, the hour and a half before sunrise on June 20th, because it's only sunrise. The sun doesn't set, you know. So there's some adjustments according to latitude and longitude. There's adjustments according to climate. There's adjustments according to what specific form of the Lord is worshipped. There's adjustments according to what you have. And therefore, one requires a spiritual master. Without the spiritual master, in fact, without receiving initiation from a spiritual master, no one should be worshipping the deity at all. Because then you're going to worship the deity in a way that will displease the deity. Of course, one can always visit temples where the deity is worshipped and participate in that way. But as far as personal worship of the deity, one has to have received the mantras and the instructions from the guru. And this is another important item, that we worship the Lord through his associates, that he's revealed himself through his associates. If we look at the Shastra, for example, the Shastra is primarily the words of the associates of God. If we were to count the number of verses spoken by the Lord himself and the number of verses spoken by sages and saints and acharyas, far more is coming from the Lord's associates. And in fact, Krishna says, if you worship me directly, you're not really my devotee. You have to worship through my devotees. So we worship the deity through our guru. We don't approach the deity directly. That first we worship guru, we offer the remnants of the deity to our guru, we offer obeisances to our guru, and we meditate that everything we're offering to the deity, we're offering through our guru. One devotee recently wrote to me, you know, everything's contaminated in Kali Yuga. If I'm not growing all my own food, how can I offer, even if I'm cooking it myself, how can I offer food that's been grown in terrible situations and so forth? And I said, but you're offering it through guru. You know, I'm so impure. So we know. But we're offering through guru. And the guru is also full of benedictions. And then there has to be love. There has to be some affection, whatever affection we can muster. It may be a very tiny spark of affection. It may be an affection just, you know, intellectually, theoretically. It may be whatever affection we can possibly muster. It should be done with affection. We should never worship the Lord ritualistically. You know, again, if you think about dealing with a person in this world, you know, if you're just dealing with them in a cursory way, they're going to feel it. We can feel it, right? We can feel it if someone's dealing with us just officially or just to get rid of us. You know, yeah, sure, I agree with whatever you say. It's like, you don't agree with whatever I say. You're just saying that to get me off your back. You don't really care. You know, okay, well, it says in this relationship book that I'm supposed to ask my significant other what they did today. Actually, I don't care. I'd rather talk about myself, but I'll ask them anyway, just so they'll cook for me or whatever. You know, and we know that. We can pick it up. We're like, hey, you're not really interested. So some love, something, some kind of affection somewhere for our guru, for something. And I personally find it very helpful before I do my worship of my own deities in the morning to read from the Shastra. I find that it really helps to bring my mind into the proper consciousness of having some affection. And to always remember that the deity is really Krishna. Prabhupada talks about this with the holy name also. He says if we understood that when we're chanting the holy name, there is Krishna personally, you know, how much care we should take, how much respect. And to be meditating on, in fact, this is one of the rules of deity worship, is that one should do the deity worship also mentally, not just physically. You know, really, okay, here's your seat and you're welcome. I'm actually washing your feet. You know, here's Gaurini Thai, and they're sitting on a throne in the bathing place, and I'm there washing their feet. There's their feet, and I'm washing their hands, and I'm giving them something to eat and meditate on them and eating it. And you know, how are they tasting it? How are they relishing tasting it? And then to reveal our minds. So this is given by Lord Kapila. So to speak to the deity. So of course we're supposed to offer prayers. One of the items of deity worship is the offering of prayers. And generally we're enjoined to offer prayers of the acharyas. But also we should reveal our own mind to the deity. We should talk to the deity. I mean, if you really want the deity to talk to you, you might want to initiate the conversation. No. I mean, I don't usually just walk up to strangers and talk to them. If someone says, oh, hi, you know, where are you from? Initiate the conversation. Of course, you could say Krishna's already initiated the conversation. He's already given us the Shastras, which has certainly initiated the conversation. But in terms of worshiping the deity, talk to him. I mean, I know many devotees who regularly read their deities, their financial reports. I know one devotee who reads her deities, all of her outgoing letters before she sends them, all of her ingoing letters when she reads them. You know, in many of our ISKCON temples, the book scores are read to the deities. But talk to them. You can, you know, tell them what you did. And in addition to talking to the deity, Krishna's in your heart. One can talk to Krishna throughout the day in one's mind. Krishna's hearing what's in our mind. We don't have to even speak out loud. And talk to Krishna. He's our friend. And if we deal with him this way, then the likelihood is that he is going to reveal himself to us. We can't force him. He's not a machine. But if we deal with him in this way, then we are likely to have some experience. My own very simple personal story for myself is, I'm sure many of you know, I was brought up in a Jewish household, and the Jews and the Muslims, I think the Muslims much more than the Jews, but the Jews and the Muslims particularly, and to a lesser extent the Protestant Christians, are really against seeing God as having a form. And you know, I was, as a child, I was told that any kind of thinking of God having a form was the greatest possible offense that you could commit. And any worshipping of a form of the Lord is a terrible offense. Although, it's interesting, the Jews dress up their scripture like a deity. They dress their scripture, which is on scrolls, in velvet cloth, embroidered velvet cloth, embroidered often with gold, and they put a gold crown on top of the scrolls, and they keep this decorated scroll in an altar with doors, and when the doors open, everybody stands up, and I mean, they take the scroll on procession, everyone follows the procession. So in many ways, they do treat the scripture actually as a deity. But in any case, I was taught like that. And when I first visited Hare Krishna temple, somehow I didn't notice the presence of the deities. Or if I noticed them, I just thought it was some sort of artwork. I really didn't notice. And then even when I stayed for 2 weeks in the temple in Chicago area when I was 17, they had very small deities. They had small Jagannath, and I think they had small Hare Krishna at that time too, I'm not sure. Practically nobody had Gaurini Thai deities in those days. And I just asked, you know, what's that? Like looking at Jagannath. I don't even know if I noticed Radha Krishna. And someone says, oh, those are representations of God. And I just didn't think about it anymore. I was more interested in the philosophy and the kirtans. But the day that I actually joined the movement officially and, you know, moved into the ashram was the day Kishore Kishori were installed. And so I really couldn't get away from the concept that the deities were God and they were being worshipped as God. And the first couple weeks it was really a problem for me intellectually, having been raised, as Prabhupada talks about, idol worship here in this purport. I was really struggling with this. I didn't tell it to anybody because I figured they'd brand me as a heretic, but it was a very deep and intense struggle. Meanwhile, I was doing service for the deities. So I did either every other day deity service and Sankirtan book distribution, or I would do a half day deity service and a half day book distribution. I was dividing my time half and half between book distribution and deity service. Of course, I wasn't initiated, so with this service I was doing was washing the deity's plates. We had to do that in a room without a sink, so we had to carry in two tubs of water, one clean and one soapy, and we'd wash the dishes like that. So I was, you know, transferring the maha plates, washing the plates, polishing the silver, making the deity's garlands, sewing for the deities, which for me was huge surrender because I'm terrible at sewing. So I was spending half of my time doing direct personal service for the deity. And I remember at the end of 2 weeks, and keep in mind, I was doing this service really with a lot of doubt and a lot of agitation that, you know, is this really God? Is this really God? And after 2 weeks, I looked at Kishore Kishori, and all of a sudden, I had an experience that I wasn't looking at statues, that before me was something other than a statue, that there was some reality. And of course, there's many, many stories of modern devotees who have miracles with the deities. On my website, I have a whole book of miracles with our deity in Mayapur of Nrisingadev. But so many stories. I mean, all over the world, with all different forms of the Lord, Prabhupada talks about appearing in dreams, with the deities appearing in dream. I mean, I had a dream once in New York where the Radharani deity, little Radha Krishna, appeared to me in a dream and said, I need to be painted. And I wasn't going on the altar there at that time, and I went to the pujari and I said, you know, do the deities need to be painted? And she said, oh my God, really, they do. So, I mean, that's a little thing, but I have God brothers and God sisters who've looked at the deities and seen, there is Krishna personally, you know, there is Balaram personally, there is Radharani personally, there is Gaurantai personally. One of the most interesting stories I heard from one godbrother is how he was intensely desiring to see the deity, and he was going out in book distribution collecting money, particularly for a new outfit. This was at the Laguna Beach Temple for the Panchatattva, and the outfit was, I think, red and gold, and this was before Gaur Purnima, so the outfit wasn't even finished yet, what to speak of offered. Anyway, all day, every day, he was like, I want to see God, I want to see God, I want to see God, I want to see God. And one time in his room, Panchatattva all appeared to him. He had a vision of Panchatattva wearing that outfit that had not yet been completed and offered. And he said at first he didn't understand what he was seeing, and then he realized, oh, I'm actually seeing God. He's here before me. So there's many, 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 many stories like this. And Prabhupada says that Krishna is eager to show himself to us. He's eager to speak to us. He's just simply waiting for us to be favorable. So if we treat God as a person, if we treat God as favorable, we will get sense perception. We will get direct sense perception in our own life. We won't have to be dependent on some miracle stories from others. We won't have to be dependent on the statements of the Shastra. We won't have to be dependent on logic and reason for our faith and our conviction. And gradually those experiences will increase until we will be literally having direct perception of the Lord at every moment. So today is, as we said, the disappearance day of Haridas Thakur. It's also Ananta Chaturdasi Vrata. And although the Gaudiyas don't generally celebrate this Vrata, this is supposed to be the day when Lord Vishnu lies on the couch of Anantasesha. And of course we have Anantasesha's Balaram, and we have some wonderful descriptions in the fifth canto of the glories of Lord Ananta. So I can refer you to those. I don't have time. I have a morning program with my grandsons in 6 minutes, so I can't stay longer than that. But I wanted to read something about Haridas Thakur. This was written by Bhakti Vinod, whose appearance day it was yesterday, and today, as I said, is Haridas Thakur's disappearance day. And so I wanted to read this poem that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote on the disappearance of Haridas. Oh, born of Muslim parents, Haridas, and trained in youth in Muslim creed, thy noble heart to Vaishnav truth did pass. Thy holy acts thy candor plead. Is there a soul that cannot learn from thee that man must give up sect for God? That thoughts of race and sect can ne'er agree with what they call religion broad? Thy love of God and brother's soul alone, bereft thyself of early friends, thy softer feelings oft to kindness prone, led on thyself for higher ends. I weep to read that Qazis and their men oft persecuted thee, alas, but thou didst nobly pray for the wicked then. For thou wert Vaishnava, Haridas, and God is boundless grace to thee, O man, united thee to one who came to save the fallen souls from evil's plan of taking human souls to shame. And he it was who led you all that came for life eternal, holy, pure, and gave you rest in heaven's enduring name and sacred blessings ever sure. Thy body rests upon the sacred sands of Swargadhar near the sea. Oh, hundreds come to thee from distant lands to enjoy a holy, thrilling glee. The waters roar and storming winds assail thy ears in vain, a Vaishnav soul. The charms of Vrindavan thy heart regale, unknown the wheel of time doth roll. He reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavs die when thou art living still and sound. The Vaishnavs die to live, and living try to spread a holy life around. Now let the candid man that seeks to live follow thy way on shores of time. Then posterity sure to him will give like one song in simple rhyme. So I don't think I have any time for questions. As I said, we have a morning program at 7 o'clock with the grandsons. I want to thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Ananta Chaturdasi ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.